Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. So we're clicking along. We're on lesson 11. So two more lessons. So next Sunday we'll be done with our book in class in Joshua. I think it's been a good study, and really appreciate your comments. Many of them have been after class, but I'll take anything on those comments because they've been very helpful to me, and have tried to make those changes accordingly and all. We kind of got a little out of order. Wednesday night we were doing the Cities of Refuge. I got to listen to Sam where I was at. He did a great job and all. So we need to remember him and his family with the loss of his mom. So I think we're almost situated here, and when we do, we'll get Joel to lead us in an opening prayer. So, it is, like I say, we're going to today backtrack a little bit, and we're going to try to walk the borders of the tribe of Judah, just to give you a feel, because when we go through those allotments, you get those cities, you get a little bleary-eyed, you get into some pretty heavy geography. And so figuring that most people are most familiar with Judah, a lot of happens in Judah, like I say, we'll walk the border lines. Joel, you lead us in prayer. Amen. All right. As we say, we're kind of in lesson 11. I think hopefully everyone agrees. Haven't had anyone come and say that we have not really been achieving these objectives. But kind of as we're going through looking, studying the book of Joshua, that looking at the fulfillment of land promise, and I mean here, I mean it's really we're getting into it, right? Because I mean we're talking about go here, these are your boundaries and all. Serving the Lord in the days of Joshua. Next Sunday, we'll be finishing off with Joshua's farewell. And I mean, Joshua, throughout his life, is such an example, and he really finishes off well in those last words and statements. And so, a very important lesson next Sunday. The character of Joshua, we've studied, we've looked at the geography, the archaeology. Today is a big geography class, so if you don't feel we've covered geography after today's class, we need to maybe have a discussion. because so many people that you potentially will talk to says, well, the conquest never occurred, the Exodus never occurred, we have tried spend several different points kind of discussing that. I had some stuff I'm working on. I don't have it quite finished, so it looks like I'll target Wednesday to try to get that finished up. Looking at the early, the late date of the conquest and kind of some of the impacts on that and give you understanding on that. We are now in the distributing of the land, and you kind of look at it, I mean, it's, you know, half the book there goes over, you know, here are the boundary lines and all. And so a lot of places that you probably maybe never heard of, as we kind of commented earlier, that if you ever look up the reference for a city, that almost always Joshua will be one of the places where that city is referred to. And in some cases, it's the only place a city is referred to. Before we kind of get in, and since we're kind of towards the end, I need to make some corrections and all. And so spend a little bit of time here. And like I say, the first one kind of fits in really where we're at because we're talking with Caleb. And that was kind of coming up with these ages. What we know is Joshua was born. We know that he was 110 when he died. And so kind of when I came up with this chart, what I did was I just based it on he's around the age of Caleb. And so that's 40, 45 kind of age. I had him a little bit older than that. But, there's a couple of things that didn't really address. And that is that it talks about Joshua being a servant of Moses since his youth. And so we normally don't think of a 40, 45 age person as being kind of in the youth. I don't read a whole lot of commentaries, but I kind of went through and skimmed most of my commentaries, and no one had this kind of suggestion. But, I mean, it's very possible that it could have been that Joshua had some role of serving Moses before Moses fled from Egypt. And so if you take that thought, then you kind of hit 45, 50, kind of coming in at the age there. The thing, though, that doesn't take care of or doesn't address is that when he's guarding the tent, it talks about him as being a young man. And so generally, it really, a lot of times what you'll read there is like, under 30 or so is considered a young man, that you're really not an adult till you're 30. That's, Jesus started preaching when he was 30. So, or thereabouts, or in his early 30s. And so if you kind of figure that, you would say, well, he would be younger than maybe 30. And then you would still have him, though, older than 20, because it was, when the spies went into the land and they said, everybody over 20 is going to die except Joshua and Caleb, you kind of get that kind of age range there. And so what you end up, though, with that is that if you have him being about 20, it's about, he comes out after he's finished up, he's 65. So he's got still half his life to lead about, to be 110. And we kind of go to some of the readings in Joshua 13, 14, where it talks about, him being an older man. So if you kind of put him in the 20 to 30 range, some of the other passages don't seem to quite click. One commentary that kind of answered that, it could be a translation kind of thing, because clearly Joshua was a servant of Moses. And so that kind of usually young people, kind of that young servant kind of connected there. So one commentary said, it could be that. Again, what we do know is Joshua was born, he was a servant of Moses, and that he died at 110. But that's kind of one reason. I mean, you kind of look at that long period there, that I kind of at least maybe put his youth before Moses fled, and so put him in that 45-50. On the other hand, 20, boy, you need to really encourage him to be strong and courageous, right? So, I mean, that's a good argument. So if you feel that he's younger, I won't disagree with you. I think you've got some good passages to go to. I think I've got at least a couple passages that say, I think he's maybe older, but then I can't really, the question of him being a young man serving at the tent or guarding the tent, the answer I give is an answer, but it's not necessarily one that I would stand on strongly. Here we have kind of this Joshua timeline. And so, we're 13, 14, that's where we're at today. We'll be hitting 18 on Wednesday night. But there in 13 it says, now Joshua was old and advanced in years. So again, that's where at 65 or so, I wouldn't say that. I don't know. You wouldn't say 65 is old and advanced, would you, Martin? Never, no. Young chick. So there's that allotment of land. So they come in, and that, what's kind of interesting here and kind of where we're looking at in today's lesson is, you know, the land has been conquered, but the people still to be seem saying that Gilgal, you know, it kind of seems, you know, they've got to be pushed out of the nest to go in and conquer the land. We kind of get that feeling there. But, you know, they gather in 13 to allot the land. At 14 is where Caleb comes up and says, hey, I have waited, you know, 45 years to take Hebron. Let me go up and take Hebron. And Joshua says, go for it. At 18, you still have some of the seven tribes that haven't taken their inheritance. And so there, you know, again, they're saying, hey, guys, go out, take your inheritance. And then, of course, Joshua 24, Judges 1, we come there with Joshua's kind of farewell address and his death, or his death there. You know, Judges 1, kind of as part of our reading, kind of there's an overlap there, right? Because we have, you know, first of all, Joshua dies and people say, who's going to go up before us? And the lot falls on Judah and Simeon to go up. And we kind of fall through there. Joshua 1:8, I think I kind of mentioned, that's kind of an interesting one because it talks about Judah taking Jerusalem, but then we come later and we see that the Jebusites still have control. And so just as we had been talking about, right, in the earlier conquest, that, you know, the people, you know, they kind of killed everybody. They didn't burn the cities, only burned three cities, right? And so the cities, apparently, people kind of filtered back in. And so there's potentially one where Judah went up and took Jerusalem, but then it didn't get occupied. This morning, as I was kind of thinking through, it could have been, you know, we don't really read as the different cities are being taken. It might have been Judah that was the tribe that went up and attacked Jerusalem there in the southern campaign. And that could be what it's referring to. But it, again, gives you, it's, you know, people want a nice, clean conquest. Go in, people all destroyed, moving right in. But when we look in, at these land allotments, we see that people kind of stayed at Gilgal. There was cities they didn't take, and there were, you know, cities they had to go back and retake because of that delay. The other error I made, and this was absolutely, completely wrong. There was no kind of question or thought or whatever. This was pure wrong. is I've got my Hebron and Shechem mixed up. Abraham is buried at Hebron. Herod built the tomb there. Actually, if you want to get a feel for what the temple looked like today, that's the one place you can go to kind of get a feel for what the temple might have looked like, all of his complex and stuff there. So Abraham's buried there, Sarah's buried there, Isaac is buried there, Rebekah, Jacob, and Leah. And then Rachel kind of died along, kind of on the road more or less, and so she's kind of just outside of Bethlehem. And so up at Shechem, you have Joseph was buried, but you had Jacob did buy a plot of land, and that's, you know, what it has is there's very little land owned by the people when they go down into Egypt. But, you know, two places they did own was at Hebron and then up at Shechem. So I got my cities turned around, and so I just want to make that correction. I know at least one or two of you caught that error. So we start when we start Joshua 13. It kind of talks about the land that was remaining. And he kind of looked at your map there, and what we see is it's kind of in that hill country is where they seem to have initially settled, and that down in the plains were areas they didn't occupy. And, you know, we're told that one of the problems was that there were chariots down there on the plains. And also, you had that this was still kind of Egyptian control on this area. And this is one of the things where people say, well, you couldn't have a 1400 BC invasion because the Egyptians still had a lot of sway in the area. But if you look at the areas kind of conquered, you see, well, yeah, where the Egyptians kind of stayed is kind of where this along those areas that were not conquered by the land. So I still don't have those maps quite to where I want them, but I'll do my best to have those ready Wednesday night, so we'll kind of go over that. One of the ones, or this passage also here in Joshua 13, is one of the places where you would kind of put potentially a late date. This is one of the couple of passages that argue that would be would point to the 1200s rather than the 1400s. And that is that of the lands that remained was the regions of the Philistines, and all of those of the Gershites from the Shehor, which is the east of Egypt, northward to the boundary of Ekron, and it was counted as Canaanite. And there were five rulers of the Philistines, those of Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. And those are ones we're going to know and deal with in Judges, and David's going to deal with, and Saul's going to deal with. And so those five cities come into play in Judges and Samuel. And so the Philistines, the sea people, really came in, invaded, they destroyed the Hittite empire and all around the 1200s. And so to say that part of the land that wasn't occupied was the land of the Philistines, you would say, well, a 1400 date, they're not there yet. Two things that you would potentially, or a potential response, is that, you know, how many of us call New York City New Amsterdam, right? I mean, there was a change in names. And so, you know, potentially in the times of the kings or whatever, someone kind of put in the Philistine names because that's what people associated that area with. And the other thing is that actually the Philistines were in that area as mercenaries. And so that, indeed, as mercenaries and working with the Egyptians and stuff, that those cities could have had really Philistines in. I know there's some documentation that at least puts them back into the 1300s. So to say that the Philistines didn't show up to the 1200s, there is evidence that they were active in the 1300s. So I think that's probably what's happening, or is the best explanation or response to that. But just be aware that this particular passage could point then to the later date. So you have the Philistines that kind of remain. Again, you have, it lists all that region along the coast up to Sidon that is not occupied. The Gersha, you know, you kind of look at the passage and that seems to point more kind of to the south, but Gershite we normally associate with that region up around the Sea of Galilee. That's the Old Testament name for Bethsaida, or what some people think is Bethsaida, hometown of Absalom's mom, that kind of area there. So, again, I always think of the Gershite of up in the north, but if you kind of read how things are going along, that potentially that southern region had a Gershite or something name associated with it. But what we see there, again, is the people are mainly in the hill countries. That's what they're occupying. And so there's a lot of land that remains, and so the people. Now, Joshua's not going to go out and lead them. They're not going to all go. It's saying, you know, tribe of Judah, your job is to go and take these places. And so kind of at this point skip this whole discussion about the eastern tribes, because if you kind of look at it, you're kind of reading along, there's, you kind of have this break with the eastern tribes, and then it moves on to Judah. So given the fact that I assumed I was going to run out of time today, I have moved the eastern tribes to the end because we had some chance to talk about those on Wednesday night, and it's going to, I want to be sure that we can walk the borders. So we kind of jump over a section there in Joshua dealing with the eastern tribes and them going back home and those cities that are there. So here Caleb comes up, the people have gathered, and he says, you know, for 45 years I've had to wait to take Hebron. This was part of the land that I spied out, and when I spied out this land, I asked Moses, Moses, this is the land I want. So, you know, Caleb, you know, you really want to read more about Caleb, because everything you read about him is, you know, we normally associate Joshua and Caleb together because those were the two spies, but there's a lot about Caleb, and just, again, 45 years having to wait here to come in and to finally to occupy this land. So, you know, Moses, you know, swore when I asked for it, you know, you can, you know, I'm going to give that to you. And even though the giants are in that area, you know, it may be that the Lord will be with me and I shall drive them out just as the Lord said. So, again, that Caleb, that, you know, he's saying, you know, if the Lord is with me, I'm going to be able to drive them out. Yeah, it just, you know, Caleb is in that shadow of Joshua. But you see those kind of statements there, and you see why Joshua and Caleb were the two that said, we can take this land. They had the right attitude. They knew the power of having God with them. And so, again, in this whole kind of discussion, that around Hebron is where, again, it wants to go. And again, this discussion there about the giants being in that land. And so, you know, that's the land that he wants. That the people, when they saw all of this, they said, we can't take this. We can't take on these giants. We can't take on these. But Caleb says, yes, we can. And 45 years later, he's still saying, we can. Let us go forth and take these people. And so according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, he gave to Caleb, the son of Jephthah, a portion among the people of Judah, Kiriath Arabia, that is Hebron. And Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak, Shishahal, Amahan, and Talamal, the descendants of Anak. And he went up from there and against the inhabitants of Debor. Now the name of Debor, formerly was Kiriath-Sevith, and Caleb said, whoever takes Kiriath-Sevith and captures it, to him I will give Achish my daughter as wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it, and he gave him Achsah, his daughter's wife. So you hear Othniel, what book of the Bible do you think of? Okay, I heard it. Judges. Y'all speak up. Judges, right? So this gives us a feel here for what we're reading here in Joshua 15. You know, we're at the end of the conquest, and what comes after the conquest? The book of Judges. So first Judges and this end of Joshua, there's this overlap that's occurring here being referred to. So, to go over kind of here, here's Hebron and Debor, kind of there. They're right there on the ridgeline. They're on the roadway, Bethlehem, Jerusalem. They're running along the ridgeline. And then that north line there is kind of the north line for the tribe of Judah, which we're getting ready to walk. So then we're told in Judges that when Judah went up, that it captured Gaza and it captured Ashkelon and Ekron, some of those cities of the Philistines. So they were able to capture them. Now, did they hold them? No, but they did capture them and hold them for a certain amount of time. And so the Lord was with Judah and took possession of the hill country, but he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. And so we have here kind of, again, they're able to take some of it, but to really hold it, to really drive the people out there, they're not able to. So here is walking the border, and I've mentioned this again. I've mentioned before the BiblePlaces.com. What we're getting ready to go through would be impossible without that set of slides that's come from Todd Bolin and the BiblePlaces.com. So if you really like these pictures, you really say, hey, I'd like to see more of them, that's the place to go to. So when we go to Joshua 15 and they start laying out the border, they start with the south. And so what we have, that we go from the south of Edom, the Salt Sea, then Korak. Okay, without kind of the map and stuff, how many of you were lost already just walking the southern border? Anyone get lost? Okay, good. Y'all were willing, to admit that in some cases. Yeah, I mean, you kind of get lost. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do here, is to kind of give you a feel. And what you do is you really get a feel for just how different the land was. And so the southern part is much more desert-like than when we look at the north. So here is kind of that region headed towards Edom along that border there. So when it talks about on the border, and here is kind of along a wadi. So, you know, rivers, creeks are probably a place for a boundary. So, you know, this potentially could have been that boundary when it talks about Edom. And then it talks about the south portion of the Dead Sea. So here we're kind of at the end of the South Sea, of the Dead Sea. And so that's where the boundary starts. And then here, Mount Sodom. Kind of looking from the north, so we're kind of flipped. Be prepared to have your directions north, south, east, and west twisting around a lot as we go through here. But this is, again, kind of at the south side of the Dead Sea. And then you have this wilderness of Zin that it talks about. And the wilderness of Zin kind of goes and covers a good bit of area there. But what we're going to do is we're going to follow a wadi, kind of valley there, the Nahal Zin, and that potentially is a good place of where the border was. So there you're kind of in the wilderness, and you're at the start of this little kind of valley. And then it mentions the ascent of Akrabim. And so, and I don't know exactly where it's at. You know you're in a desert area when you realize that Akrabim means scorpion. So this is the ascent of the scorpions. So as you're going up this valley, it's a place where scorpions like to hang out. And so, again, the wilderness of Zin right there as you're beginning to come up to this valley. Again, the ascent, just looking back in that wilderness of Zin area. And here is kind of, there's a modern road there. And actually, there was even, this route has been used for a long time. And so this is kind of where they figure that ascent of Akrabim is because of this well-used road. And so here, you're sitting on kind of the plains of the wilderness of Zin, and so you're going to go up along that ridge line there, up to that. But, you know, it at least kind of gives you, you know, it's a place where you can say, hey, yeah, I know where this is at. And so here, again, is the wadi as you're getting ready to begin to go up the ascent. Here's looking after you've come up, and you're kind of looking back down. And here are part of the Romans, where the Roman road was, or where Roman steps were. And here's your more modern road, and it's a switchback as you're kind of going up this. They're working along the ridge, and so you're switching back and forth as you come up this ascent. So when you look at that, you say, yeah, you know, you see why that's kind of a border mark, right? Because that really sticks out. It's a place where people were traveling. And so when you say Judah, your land goes down to that ascent. People say, hey, I know where that ascent is. And then right there is this Naha Zen that you can kind of follow. And again, this is a place where, you know, you pretty much, hey, I've got a valley here, kind of a canyon. That's a pretty good marker, right? I know which side of the canyon are you on. And so it even comes on up here to some waterfalls. Again, a good potential marker for the border lines. Then from there, you're going, it goes southward of the ascent of Akerman and passes along Zin. And so this wilderness of Zin is kind of, this is at least a spice route that is out there. So I don't know if this is exactly where the border kind of were, but it gives you a feel for what the wilderness looked like. Again, you know, they might have occupied the land, but you know, this isn't where you're going to raise a lot of people because it is kind of more some of the drier area there as you're going. And so then we have pretty well made our way there, right on the right there. We've moved along to the desert of Zin, and then we come to Kadesh Barnea. So does that name sound familiar to you? Okay, I got at least, all right, and why does it sound familiar to you, Chester?
It's mentioned in Joshua.
It's mentioned in Joshua, yeah, it's a key part. Cherry, I saw a good head shake from you. What else do you remember about Kadesh Barnea? That was where they were camped. So, you know, they come from the Sinai Desert. So, I mean, the Kadesh Barnea, you are well down in the Sinai Desert or Peninsula. And so the border kind of goes, and that's where they camped out. And so just to kind of give a little bit of description of all that happened there, this is where the 12 spies were sent out. It served as the base camp. They spent a lot of their time in the wilderness here. Here's where Miriam died. This is where Korah's rebellion occurred, the budding of Aaron's rod, and this is near where Moses spoke the rock for the water to come out, which kept him from going into the promised land. So there was a lot that occurred there. And so that would be, again, a good place for a border marker, right? When you're dealing with that kind of terrain, having a place like that, you kind of know, okay, our borders go to here, and we know where that's at. And so right along that is this river kind of valley. There's water there, so it's a place that a lot happened, and it's, a very recognizable spot there on the south border. Some more pictures there, just kind of showing you that area. So then we move from there, this map says this could be another place where the ascent of the scorpion is located. And so then it moves us on to the Brook of Egypt. And, of course, we kind of think of the Brook of Egypt, well, that's got to be way down there in Egypt. But, no, it's kind of actually there along, again, the Sinai Peninsula there, that area. But that's the brook. You know, it is a marker. It's not a huge Mississippi River or anything like that. But that kind of is that southern territory marking of where Judah is in our description there. So it took us a while to describe the south, didn't it? Kind of going through. Because, first of all, we're not familiar with that. There's not a lot there. And so, you know, we're kind of just trying to get a feel for the terrain. For the eastern border, it's really easy. It's the Dead Sea. So you're going up the Dead Sea there. So, or Salt Sea. So kind of going up through En-Gedi, that area there. So here is the Dead Sea. This is the northern end. And it kind of flips us to the northern end there. And this is where the Jordan River comes in. So when it says, you know, your marker is there where the Jordan River comes into the Dead Sea. So you know where that is. And you know where the coastline is, or the for the Dead Sea as you're moving along there. And probably along that side in Gedi is one of the few places. There's a spring there. That's one of the places where David hid from Saul. Of the places along there, watered places, is kind of one of the main things we know. Now, not active in the time of Joshua, but that we also know of along this coast would be Masada, where Herod built a fortress, and where one of the last places during the Jewish revolt to hold out. So here again is in Gedi Spring, an area of greenness there, and you're kind of seeing, when you kind of go up there, is that plateau area that we talked about in the ridge, and you're kind of in the wilderness of Judah there. So here, we again come there to the south. So that is your eastern border there in for Judah, is just along the Dead Sea. So that one was pretty easy. And if you think about it, actually the west border is going to be pretty easy because that's the Mediterranean. The north border, though, is a little more challenging there because, A, you're sharing this with Benjamin, and then it's a lot more populated. And so there's a lot more cities and things that are kind of mentioned there. So the first ones, there's not really places there now. And so it's a little more difficult to kind of nail down. But you have here at the top of the door of the north of the Dead Sea, you had Gilgal. We have Jericho that we know there, right on the right. And so somewhere between those two points, are these two places, Beth Hogla and Beth Areba. So those kind of two places are somewhere along in there, and so the boundaries are kind of going along there. They connect and kind of come through where the Valley of Acre is, where we kind of deal with Achan, and so is in that kind of description there. But what we do know is that, so somewhere from the north part of the Dead Sea on up to where Jericho is where that location is. So that's kind of the area, the region, and so that somewhere to the north where Benjamin would start, and more to this side would be Judah, and that side would be Benjamin. So here's kind of a better one of that. You've moved up a little bit. The ascent of Adaman to Jerusalem, we kind of talked about, and actually we're going to follow that. That's part of the border. You've got Jericho, which is actually part of Benjamin, but kind of south of Jericho, somewhere right along that line where the ascent of Adaman is the borderline between Benjamin and Judah. And so here is the Wadi, kind of the start of that ascent. And so it's, again, water's just come down, eroded that. I can identify that, right? I mean, if I say, well, I'm in the middle of that, that one side of that is Judah, the other side of that is Benjamin, I can do that. I can say, yep, that's the line. So here is kind of following, looking, you're here, you're walking, moving your way up to the highlands, or to the plains, where ridge, where Jerusalem is. And again, on the south side is Judah, on the north side is Benjamin. And so then we move from there. We come up to this En-Shemesh, which, again, we don't quite know where that is indicated at, but it tells us that it ends at En-Rogel, or En-Rogel. So we do know generally where that location is. And that location is just right about where the split occurs between the Hinnom Valley and Kidron Valley. And those we know because we spend somewhat time dealing with Jerusalem, right? so we kind of know those valleys, and that Jesus, when he crossed from Jerusalem, he crossed the Kidron Valley going up to Gethsemane. So those kind of valleys. And kind of what happens then is that from En-Rogel, I'm going to go kind of that left side, and I'm going to follow that valley, the Hinnom Valley, and that is where the Judah tribe. So we see that Benjamin, that's right there, right? So we can kind of see where, you know, David says, well, I'm going to take Jerusalem. He's really, it's kind of part of Benjamin, but it's right there on the border between the two. And then you have, and that little Hinnom Valley is not really much of a valley. So here is En-Rogel, and the Pool of Siloam, that is right there at that southern tip of the city of David. And so, I mean, that's kind of how close we're talking about. And so it goes along the Hinnom Valley, and so here's the map kind of showing that. And again, at that time it probably was a little bit deeper, but today, I mean, it's a pretty shallow valley. You can tell it's a valley, but it's not something that just really sticks out. But that was a key part of the boundary line. So it then kind of goes south of Jerusalem and moves along again the Hinnom Valley, and then comes out of that, and the next kind of place that we connect with is that Rephaim Valley. That is our next kind of location. And so again, kind of the Rephaim Valley, and kind of moving then on into the Shephelah along the Zurek Valley, and then that takes us right out to the plains. So the Rephaim Valley there in the middle, kind of coming through. Does this look more green than what we were looking at when we were looking at the southern border? Yeah, a lot more. There's a lot more rain there. And so this is where you have a lot more farmland and, again, a lot more towns. So that Rephaim Valley is kind of looking out that way towards Bethlehem. And it goes up to Kareth-Jerim. And Kareth-Jerim, remember when we were kind of talking about the Southern Conquest, that was kind of one of the places, and then they were kind of fleeing to, or fleeing along. So that comes into there, and this is kind of attempt again to give you a different feel, that again, Jerusalem, the Hinnom Valley, we're on the ridge line. We come down Kareth-Jerim, we're moving down the ridge line of the Shephelah, and then from there we're going to move on in to the Zurek Valley. And so there is how we're kind of running our border. And again, those are ridge lines, valleys. Those are places I can say, yes, this is where the border is at, the towns along in those valleys. And so from there, there's our, let's see, I should have a yellow line. I do, good for me. So the Beshemeth, Tamith, Jabneel, and where you then get is, it wasn't a port then, Herod the Great made it a port, Caesarea. But on that plains, that's where the Philistines were in that area. But that kind of topographical map gives you that feel of coming down off the ridge. So there is the Sorek Valley, much more green, good farmland, and so, but also good places where chariots can cause you grief. So some challenges there. Beth Shemesh, again, right there in the valley area of the Sorek Valley. Timnah, part of that. And then, but what cuts across that is that diagonal that we were talking about when we were talking about the southern kingdoms. And then there is Timnah, more of the Sorek Valley. And then we're coming here to Ekron. And there we're now in the plains again, very nice and green. And I think we should be, that's the Sharon Plain. Again, you're on the flats and looking at that. And then the western border is the Mediterranean. So we have walked the borders of Judah. And so we see very different types of land, desert, wilderness, hill country, you know, valleys, green areas, places where you can do terrace farming. And we also see, I mean, these are real places, and as we're going along here, thousands of years later, we can still take what Joshua describes as the border lines, and we can pretty well walk the borders. These are real places being mentioned here. And so you kind of get lost in this section because it's just so many cities and stuff. But when you're talking boundary lines, even today, I mean, that's not the most exciting reading in the world, but it's very important because that tells you where your property lines and stuff are at. And so here's Ashkelon, again, that kind of Mediterranean, and that's kind of what it looks like along the western coast. So we have a couple of minutes. So here's our eastern tribes. And so, Reuben was on the southern part of those tribes, and it's the Arnor Gorge, Arnor River, that's kind of the south. And we look at the land, and again, it's a very distinctive border spot, so that going through that river, it's very clear. On this side of the river is not Reuben, this side is the tribe of Reuben. Again, moving along that river, then you kind of come up, and you know, it wasn't those kind of, it was where they wanted to be was in that top country there. Very good places for grazing your sheep and things there. So we will look at these last tribes that just really seem to have a hard time going to their allotments, so that Joshua said, hey, go take this land. So we'll do that Wednesday night, and then Sunday we finish up with Joshua's farewell.
I want to encourage the folks who are sitting in the back on the blue chairs. This is an opportunity for you to find a spot on the more comfortable chairs up front. We seem to have a lot of folks here recently in the 400. So I want to encourage you to find a seat up front before the rest of the folks come in from the Bible class. So grateful for your cooperation. Thanks so much.